will call to order the regular meeting of the Governance Committee of the Monterey Peninsula Water Supply Project. And we will ask that the minutes reflect that Dave Potter, Jeannie Byrne, Jason Burnett, and Rich Finland are here representing the county, the Water Management District, the Water Authority, and Cal-Am respectively. And if you will please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We will now turn to the public comment portion of the meeting. Would any member of the public like wish to speak to the Governance Committee on any item not on today's agenda? Seeing none, we will close the public comment period and move to agenda item one, which is the adoption of minutes from May 23rd, the committee meeting just last week. And compliments to Eileen for getting those minutes out. They're quite detailed. People had a chance to review
those. I read them, but I was not at that meeting.
Right, and
I wasn't either, but we are entitled to vote if you need a quorum to make it happen.
Any discussion on the minutes? I do have one minor point at the back end. It talks about plant 15 horsepower motors. I can't imagine that we're worried about a 15 horsepower motor.
Yeah, it should be 1500.
Yeah, okay. Good pickup. So I have a motion to approve the minutes with that correction.
Second.
Motion and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. We'll now move on to item number two, which is review and comment on final draft design build request for proposals prepared by California American Water. And Rich, if you don't mind, since we have two new people from relative to last meeting, just give a overview in terms of the process and the document before us, and then I will attempt to give a summary, public minutes, I think, give a good summary of.
Are you okay if I punt to Anthony? Because I was actually
absolutely
absent for the first half of last meeting, so I know you did that last time.
I meant I was handing it to Cal-Am, so whoever you want.
Rob did it, but I'm happy to fill in as much as I can. Okay, so what we've prepared thus far is a draft request for proposals, as well as a draft design build contract and the accompanying appendices to the draft design build contract. Our schedule is such that we submitted this to the Governance Committee on May 20th with the request that we get any comments to the documents received by this Friday, May 31st, so that we can then turn around and incorporate the comments into the draft documents with the ultimate goal of issuing the RFP on June 17th to the shortlisted firms. And I did mention last week that with respect to the SOQ process, we received SOQs from 9 different teams, SOQs being statements of qualifications. Coming down to the end of our evaluation process with the expectation that we're going to shortlist most likely 4 or 5 firms at the earliest, the end of this week, more likely sometime next week when we would make that announcement as to the shortlisted firms. With respect to the RFP itself, we did receive some comments at the last meeting. We went back and had some internal discussions, and Rich, maybe at the appropriate time, you can speak to where we stand on those comments, and yes. I believe there were discussions at the TAC that I was not privy to. And then with respect to the contract, again, Rob's opinion last week, and I'll echo it, and I agree with him, that we felt that this is fairly typical of a design build contract for the industry. With respect to the contract itself, there were some issues that were raised last week that we discussed, like the arbitration provision, for example, and we took that to heart. But we feel, you know, there were certain key items of the RFP that we were specifically looking to the committee for comments on, like the evaluation criteria, as an example. So that's kind of a high-level overview of my recollection of the discussion last week. And our hope was that we would get additional comments submitted from the committee this week.
And just so everyone understands, the documents before us in the packet that I think was distributed yesterday, thank you, Arlene, for working on Memorial Day to get this out, is a list of 57 comments ranging from high level to correcting typos, 57 comments from the Water Authority's consultant, Alex Westner of SPI. And these have already been distributed to CalAM, and I understand that Rich and Alex had a conversation about them this morning. Rich, I don't know if you want to speak to that or any other conversations.
I don't know what detail you wanted to go into, but you know, there's 57 comments. Roughly a third of them we agree with 100%, so there's no issue. We're just going to incorporate the changes and appreciate this, you know, bringing up the issue so we could talk about it. A third of them, we need to maybe have some feedback from the group here on where we wanted to go. And the biggest of that third is there was a discussion on, is Appendix 2 too prescriptive? Is it too much detail for the proposers? And I know we've been, as a team, been wrestling with that, because what we're trying to prevent is to have a huge range of costs where some person bids a very, very cheap desal equipment that's used for an oil rig versus, you know, a firm that knows how to do this properly and submits it on the higher end. We need something in the middle that's going to really work. And so we have a fairly prescriptive design requirement. It doesn't mean they have to bid that. I mean, they're allowed to have some alternatives. And so that was the debate last week, if we're too prescriptive or not. I had a conversation with Alex this morning, and I think he leaned towards that.
Can you go into Rob Wellington and make sure that that's what Rob wants to distribute?
So the idea was, at least from when talking with Alex this morning with SPI, he was saying, well, no, the level of prescription is about right for this type of project, because you do need to ensure that you have some minimum criteria and quality met to make sure you don't have this huge range. So we kind of feel like we're in the right spot. Maybe there are some areas that we are too prescriptive, and maybe there's some areas that we're not. If you read some of his comments, he's saying, hey, Rich, specify the material. Okay, that's being more prescriptive.
Right.
And others, he's saying, hey, maybe you can, you know, step back a little bit on this one. And we're going to look at those things and we're comfortable with that feedback. So we think we've got kind of the right level based on his feedback.
So just a question on that. So if they have alternatives, those are broken out separately so everybody can see these are not part of the prescriptive bid?
And maybe we have to improve upon that in the contract language. But the idea is that everyone's going to bid a certain base criteria.
Right.
And then they're going to be asked to give alternates. And to encourage that, the scoring for the RFP will be higher if they were to provide the alternates. So for instance, if you had one firm A just said, hey, $75 million with no alternatives, and firm B had $75 million with three alternatives, then B would score better because they looked at ways to optimize that design.
And on those alternatives, you have some that has to be equal or?
Correct. They're going to have to give us a certain amount of specificity to what they're proposing so we're comfortable with the approach.
It would be equal to what you had specified.
Right. Yeah. And there's some issues that we acknowledge we don't have the right answers for. I mean, we talked about, and I've got Celine Trussell here. She's our technical expert on some of this stuff. But pre-treatment is a big issue because we don't have the slush water yet. So we've covered pre-treatment in our design because it needs to be there just in case. It's been in our cost all along, but I know that came up as an issue. And pre-treatment has different definitions for people. Some people might think it's coagulation, you know, and all this stuff. For us, we just have a simple pretreatment, not extensive. We think it's the right level, but certainly, you know, kind of the governance committee's thought is it too much or not enough?
It's kind of hard when you don't know what you're treating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, exactly. So that's why we think having a base removes that speculation.
Yeah, I mean, historically, you know, you want to err on the side of being as specific as possible, but you walk a very thin line here between being specific about something that may not be 100% what you're supposed to be analyzing, so it's difficult.
Yeah.
But I think that's a good approach.
So I don't know if you want to go item by item, or that's pretty detailed.
Well, yeah, I don't think we need to do that. If there are any particular items that you want to flag and get further, or get direction from the governance committee, again, these are our consultants' comments. We, as a committee, have not
looked at it?
Well, hopefully we've looked at it, but we haven't endorsed them yet.
Yeah, right. It would be nice if there were like some asterisks for the principal things that you're concerned about.
So our thought is we're going to have, there's a place for responses and actions. We'll fully fill. I've got some of them filled out online, but you know, some of them might say okay, and that may not be enough detail. So we'll give you some more reasons why, and then we'll submit that formally back to the committee, I guess. That way you have a record of where we are, and then you can develop your final list maybe from the ones that are left open, because there could be a couple that are left open that we just hadn't. For instance, I know in the minutes, one of the comments was about the payment for completing early. Mm-hmm. And I still have a call in the DRA to see kind of their stance on that. So generally, they really encourage that.
I read the minutes. That was a great one where if I get a incentive clause to finish early, but I fudge the schedule so that I can finish early, it's kind of moving the goal line.
Yeah.
Right. And that after last week's governance committee, we did have a TAC meeting and then a water authority meeting. So let me take a minute to just note some of the conversations that came out of that. And the TAC is recommending, and the governance committee and the water authority agreed. Whether or not we agree, we'll see. Is to use a 30-year NPV for doing the cost comparison, rather than a 20-year, noting that certain amount of equipment would be needing to be replaced in the 20 to 30-year time frame, and it makes sense to include that in the calculation. It was noted that the rate of corrosion in that area, Keith Israel in particular noted this from his experience operating the PCA's facility, rate of corrosion is quite high. Higher than in other marine environments, areas close to the ocean, and so there should be some attention paid to making sure that Cal-AM isn't going to have to replace something you know, 5 years down the line because it's rusted out, and we ratepayers aren't going to be asked to foot that bill. There was quite a bit of talk about the level of detail, and the TAC and the governor and the water authority both came down on the side of generally wanting to focus more on outcomes and performance measures. I think based on what Alex is saying and what I'm hearing you say, Rich, it may be keep the same level of detail for the base case, but really encourage alternatives to be put forward and make sure that we have sufficient level of detail of those alternatives and that we are specifying what the outcomes and performance measures would be, and that the general feeling is there wasn't enough weight given or attention paid to those alternatives. The Water Authority was not comfortable with the notion of a bonus clause. I think as Dave, you're recognizing, or the minutes recognize, it creates some complications, and so the Water Authority felt that we shouldn't go there, and actually that's consistent with the Cal-AM's original drafting of the RFP. And there was a question as to whether there's enough ability for Cal-AM to give a qualitative rating for the quality of the design build team. And I think the Cal-AM's response was that the evaluation criteria gives a 40% weight to the technical merits of the proposal, and that within those technical merits you can include a consideration of the quality of the team being put forward. And there's also the note that any of the four or five teams will have already passed your initial test of the RFQ. But
which is 100% quality, not 100%, but a very high level quality,
right.
70, something like that.
But the TAC noted that even within those four or five design build firms or teams, there may be variation, and you may want to, given the importance of delivering this on time because of the CDO, and the such a large portion of our overall water, we really want to make sure that it's a high-quality team. So you may want to allow for, and I think it does allow for, continuing to provide some weight if there are differences in your judgment between the quality of the four or five teams responding to the RFP. I think that those are the main points that came out of the water.
Good.
So then this issue regarding foreign company participation and their licensing capabilities in California, I wouldn't want to preclude anybody from, you know, out of the country not being able to participate, given the expertise I'd expect them to have from other ventures elsewhere. So that doesn't look like that's been resolved, but it might be part of some language in the RFP?
Yeah, we just want to clarify the language. I think it said something to the effect that major players should have a licensing in the minors, and we're just going to clarify what that means.
I don't know if I've ever heard of holding a bid for 365 days.
And that's already been addressed. We're going to change that.
Yeah, that's we're going to shoot yourself financially. And is there wage discussion somewhere that's been had to date?
So wage right now, you know, we are seeking state revolving loan fund money, so there's a prevailing wage requirement. There was a comment made about, I think Bill had raised it, do we include Davis-Bacon requirements if we're going to seek federal money? And we're still checking into that. I don't think we have a resolution on that issue yet. Because sometimes Davis-Bacon comes
with... Seems like maybe you could get over all of that, though, by having some overlying principle regarding wages versus what strings are attached to the dollars. That would be my suggestion.
Supervisor Putter, if I may, on the licensing issue. At the proposal stage, we require only the major players to have the appropriate licenses at that time.
Yeah, I can't imagine this is an experience, you know, native only to California.
Right.
I mean, it's got to happen a million other places.
Right.
But other projects.
Right, but any entity performing the work is required to comply with all applicable law. Right.
Yeah.
So everyone's going to be required to have whatever licenses they need to do the work for the position.
Just had a question, not to... beat up a subject that's already been passed, but won't there be an established deadline?
Yeah, the you mean as far as the agreement goes?
Well, as far as, yeah, the deadline for having it up and running, just
yes.
The construction deadline?
Yeah, I don't
acceptance. Well, the proposers are going to propose what they think the deadline will be. In the contract, we will have a deadline, yes. But at this point, we're not setting a deadline. Right, unless we change that, which
that's
to my knowledge we have not. So the proposers will be essentially competing on the deadline that they are going to, if selected, meet.
Okay, so they're setting up your deadline. I mean, I can understand not having a benefit you know, for finishing early if they're setting the timeline, but it seems like ultimately CalAM would set what their own deadline is going to be.
Well, we have certainly debated that it'd be nice if we could make it, you know, the end of the CEO deadline. Right now, we saw our schedule about a year after that. And so to put it that day, it's not realistic in our mind, I think, just because there's so many different issues in the permitting side of it, not the construction and design side of it, that actually is more manageable. It's the getting to that point. And so we're basically telling the design team, because they have to do a lot of the permitting work for us.
Right.
You know, taking all that into effect, the design, and what can you deliver us?
But won't they, don't you have a basic time period for the construction? So from beginning to end, there would be, you know, say it's a 2-year
right.
time frame, and that's where your benefit to finishing early would come into play, is on that construction end, not on the...
Well, it's a design build, so right now we basically said they have 48 months from notice of award to everything has to be up and running and delivering water. And so it's 4 years, which is a huge amount of time. But the tough part for me is, where is the actual construction starting at?
Right.
Because it's all the Coastal Commission, one of the permits that we're working through. If that gets early, then they have a ton of time. If it comes in late, then...
And Rich, I'll add to that. In addition to the when's the construction start date, it's when can they acceptance test? Don't forget, we've got to do a whole other procurement for wells so that they have feed water to be able to acceptance test this project.
Yes.
And if that's not ready, then the DB contractor on this project is going to get the appropriate relief. You know, they're going to get an extension of time to complete their work and acceptance test because they need the feed water. So there's a lot of complicating factors.
And it goes the same as the pipelines leaving.
Yeah.
I mean, we've always been on the assumption that the pipelines will be done waiting for the desal plant. We think that's a lot more straightforward. However, you know, we are going through a bunch of cities, and there could be issues that arise.
Right. And I'll just add again, we're, you know, the concept is the proposer is competing on that, right? They're all going to propose a scheduled acceptance date that they say they can meet. And again, these are proposals, right? We're going to enter into discussions and interviews with these teams, and we'll challenge them in that process and get comfortable with that this is the best we can do with the best team. So in other words, what they propose isn't the be-all, end-all. There will be some discussion.
It's negotiable.
It is negotiable.
I mean,
there's not a penalty for...
Well, I didn't hear a penalty clause.
Not until the contract is signed. So you're going to negotiate. They're going to submit proposals. We'll have interviews. We'll have discussions. We'll finalize an agreement. When we finalize the agreement, there will be a set firm date in that document. If the design build contractor does not meet that date, they're subject to delay damages.
But now that date is set after they get all the permits in line.
The date is set when the contract is signed.
Which would be
and
before
it's,
right. Most of the permits.
It's right. Based on assumed issuance date of certain permits.
But delay damages.
But then every time those permits get rolled over, they're going to get an extension
yes.
of time anyway.
Yes.
Okay.
If it's for a reason other than their fault, if they were diligent in pursuing the permits, then yes. The answer to that question is yes.
It's like a building permit. We wouldn't be involved in getting that at all for them. That's purely on them. So if they have a delay getting a building permit, that's on them. They're going to eat that time. But if it's a Coastal Commission permit, we're helping them get that because they're just part of the whole project. And if that's delayed by, you know, way after their schedule showed, then yes, we would be working with them to amend this.
That's nobody's fault.
This is commission.
Charles, did you have a comment?
What Anthony said.
Always the best answer.
Yeah.
Let me open it. In fact, feel free to jump in. Anyone. We don't need to have a formal public comment period, but Bill, go ahead.
Mayor Burnett, I was had a question that I didn't. I mean, we talked about the early finish issues and the. And the specificity, which in my mind would, you know, just at that level would discourage, you know, innovation and creativity. And I think we covered those today. There's a blank right at the beginning of this for the proposers, who they are. Are you ready to disclose who the proposers are going to be?
Not yet. No, and again, we're not going to disclose the identities of the nine teams who submitted SOQs. We will disclose the identity of the what we anticipate to be four or five
yes.
shortlisted teams.
Yes.
So that would be...
That I understand. The question is when?
As I said earlier, I don't know if you were here, Bill, but it's either going to be at the earliest this Friday or more likely next week.
Okay. I'll just take the opportunity to remind all of us that we are not to have any communication with anyone associated with any of these firms.
That's no dinners, no baseball games. No.
Yeah. Really important that we abide by that. Other comments? Charles or Don, did you have further thoughts on the arbitration question? It sounded like internally Kalam had some further deliberations, but did the...
Well, I don't know that you made a decision on that yet.
Yeah, if I may, what we've discussed, and I think where we're headed with that, is we are not going to make arbitration mandatory. Like mediation, we are going to make it optional if the parties decide to arbitrate a particular issue they can agree to. Absent that, it would be resolution in the courts.
And if my memory serves me, that generally is the direction that Don and Charles, you were
right.
recommending.
Right.
I listened to Charles and Don.
Okay, Dave. Earlier, you said something about wages, but I didn't capture what you were.
Well, I just
for it.
Want to make sure that we're not going to bring in a high level of non-union, you know, sub-prevailing wage labor elements into the project.
And is there a way that I'm not familiar with?
My suspicion is that in a project like this, that these guys are all going to be unionized, given the level of expertise in it. But I wouldn't want to just make that a blanket assumption and find out I mean, those that are familiar with the issues out of Fort Ord, for example, you know, we're constantly having, you know, contractors, and there'll be a lot of them from out of the area coming in here, not necessarily caring about the local workforce, but also going ahead and trying to cut the corners as far as what prevailing wage is and the responsibilities of doing that from an equitable basis throughout the miscellaneous labor elements that are going to be. I just want to make sure that we're aware of that.
We're requiring prevailing wage here, so even non-union workers will be paid prevailing wage. And in, you know, my experience in discussions with potential proposers here, that they're used to that. That's common practice for them.
I just want to get it on record. Yeah. So the trick's in the monitoring, as you all know. I mean, if you don't check, it's going to slip.
And because we're going after state revolving fund monies, that's kind of automatic.
But you've got a pot of other funds to pay on it.
Well, but it's kind of being...
Funny, I guess if you blend them all together, then it's all tainted.
Yes, in a way.
In a good way.
So in terms of the RFP itself, does that address?
I think I'm comfortable with what it heard.
Sounds like maybe an ongoing conversation to make sure the CalAM is monitoring.
Well, just make sure that people are better aware of that.
You know, it probably would be helpful if it's actually stated in the agreement, then it just takes that issue off the table.
I believe it's in there, and if it's not, we'll add it, but I believe it's in there.
Okay, any other comments, suggestions?
The only other comment, I don't know what you're doing on local hires. I don't know if there's something in there about that as well. So I know that's been another issue out of board as well.
Mm-hmm. The discussion last week was, I forget if it was Dave Stalter or someone who observed that we have the goal of 21.5% on WBDVE, whatever, minority women and small business veteran hires. So we stated that there. And I think the question was, do we have a similar stated goal for local hires? And the answer was, we do not, and we did not anticipate doing that. Obviously, that's up for discussion.
But there is a plan requirement.
There is a plan requirement.
There is
just
a plan requirement.
Stated goal of a percentage of spend.
For the 21%, I understood that, but I was thinking in terms of the local.
Right. For local, there is not.
There's a plan, but not a goal. So, you know, we're asking them to give us feedback what they're doing, but there's not a stated 10% or 20% or 30%.
You know, I know that's a big issue locally, so I just thought I would throw that out there.
Yeah.
You know, it might be something you might want to consider adding in some fashion, more so than just a comment.
So one way to handle it would be to specify that the plan will be evaluated, will be part of the 40% technical evaluation. And so, you know, be clear that it's not that we would ask for a particular threshold, or maybe the governance committee would recommend that, but at least the CalAM would be explicit that you will be considering that plan in your evaluation criteria under the 40% technical merit side of the equation.
And that is the intent, and if it needs to be bolstered, we can do that. Again, the 21.5% goal is something that's easy for us to say because that's the PUC's stated goal. Again, if this committee decides that, you know, and recommends there should be a stated goal on local hire, we can consider adding that.
I would like to see that stronger.
Okay. So the local hire plan will be evaluated as part of the 40% technical merit score.
Right.
Is that?
Well, we have a local county hire, local preference hiring ordinance.
Yeah, but it doesn't necessarily mandate these guys.
But it might be good to take that template and try to use it on this.
Yeah, right.
And that's specific all the way down to, you know, supplies and materials.
That might be a good idea, actually.
Okay. And is there a stated percentage that the committee recommends that we should be aware of?
The ordinance speaks to that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly that.
And it was fully vetted through the architectural and contracting crew or subcommittee.
Right.
And when it got to the board, surprisingly for Board of Supervisors, it was non-controversial. It's a very special moment.
Let me build that.
Well, I mean, this, and all projects are different, I realize that, but for, at least for the San Clemente project, I can say a lot of the 21.5% goal that was for the disadvantaged businesses were end up being local, because that's how they found folks to work on the project. So it's not always a one-to-one, but there's a lot of correlation there. And so certainly there could be firms that meet both of those requirements.
So Charles, if you could get us any language that you would suggest, or
sure,
that would be appreciated. Thank you.
Okay. And Mr. Yale, the RFP has a form in there that has to, among a whole ton of forms, that have to be submitted with the proposal. One of them is the local utilization plan, and the and it requires, you know, the listing of local hires, local subcontractors, local vendors as part of the plan. So including it as part of the evaluation criteria is a really good idea. If it's not there already, and I don't remember that exactly, but it may be. But in response to Supervisor, Supervisor Potter's question, I don't know if that plan says it must comply with the county ordinance. Although I would think it would, since we're doing business in the county. That certainly implied if not stated.
So I'm not familiar enough with the ordinance to know whether we would want to say it should comply with the ordinance, or that CalAM should evaluate the plans relative to the ordinance, which would be
My suggestion or request would be that we look at the ordinance and incorporate from that, in the spirit of the ordinance, something into the
document. You can't just blindly agree to it.
Right. don't want to set a precedent there, Supervisor.
All we're doing today is making recommendations. CalAM has the right to push back or not fall if they choose not to. Okay. Any further comments? Do you want me to try to summarize where I think we are?
Sure.
Jason, one final. Yeah, we did ask for some feedback on the 40% technical, 60% cost. Is there any way you could maybe help that decision? Because that's a big thing. And we always wrestle with that. Because cost is very important. So some people say it should always be above half, but some people say no, it should be technical. And we certainly felt like we've gone through this SOP process, so we think 40 is reasonable, but one does.
Where does schedule fit? Because schedule
comes under that 40%.
Very important for this project in particular.
Schedule comes under the 40%.
Basically, everything other than price comes under the 40%.
Right.
And again, the theory being, having the two-step procurement process, we've qualified 4 or 5 firms as currently estimated, or teams. Any one of them can do the job to our satisfaction. That's why we're shortlisting them. Therefore, the higher emphasis on price in the second stage of the procurement process. So that the 40% would probably have a lesser weight on qual, since we've already done that, although some, relative to the mayor's comments earlier, but more so on what they're proposing for this particular project, including schedule. That was the internal thought process on the 60-40 split.
My list is that we support generally the level of detail for the base case, but that we would want to see more language requesting alternative designs, and that those require the same level of detail and have very specific performance measures that those alternatives would meet. That's one. Two is that that RFP be explicit in requiring prevailing wage. Three is that the local hire plan be given consideration in the 40% technical evaluation criteria, and there be consideration or reference made to the county hiring ordinance. Four is that in doing the cost comparison, a 30-year NPV be used. Five is that there be language speaking to the issue of the high rate of corrosion in that area. Six, this is really consistent with the existing RFP, but that there not be an early completion bonus. Did I miss anything? There's obviously a lot more on the notes, but in terms of the relatively high level points, anything else that we wanted to make?
No, that's meaningless.
Bill, in your, have I missed anything that the Water Authority wanted me to bring to this meeting?
No, those were the big issues, yeah.
And Don?
I agree that those were the issues.
Okay. Should we have a motion to that effect?
Well, I mean, this is a recommendation.
Yeah, so it would be a motion to recommend those 6 points to Kellyanne, and I'll...
So moved.
Okay, motion second. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. I think as per our rules, we need to get you something in writing. Arlene, I don't know if you're able to send me something in the next couple days that I could review. I need to get it to you by the end of the week.
By Friday.
But you've also heard the direction we're going.
Yes.
Okay. And I guess I should ask, do you see any pushback from Kellyanne on any of the things that you may be?
Any of the six items we just discussed?
Right.
I don't believe so.
Yeah. I mean, the only one that just engineering-wise, that 30-year, I think we'll run it, but it's a guess. 30 years out is a long time, and that's what we always do that trade-off of what's really going to need to be fixed in 30 years versus 20.
Okay.
We have put together a schedule, so I have a feel for what that should be. We may ask for the 20 and 30 just to be safe, and then helping us evaluate. Because these guys who propose on this, they know the game, and it's a numbers game for them.
Right.
Do things to make it look better for them. So you may see 20, 30, not just 30.
So if you're asking for... If you're asking for more, then at least they're on notice that they can't just spec out something that has a 21-year life and be able to skate by. I think that's what we were concerned about.
I just had one more general comment, which gets back to the construction schedule. It seems like there should be something that's a little more defined in terms of the design portion versus what permits are in hand, what the construction schedule is going to be. I don't know exactly how you put that together, but that's maybe something we want to consider.
Okay. We have an idea what it should be, but certainly we're going to ask that.
But if there's some point in the contract when they actually get their permits, that then you say, well, okay, here's what we want this construction schedule to be. I mean, it just seems so open-ended to lump it all together.
Yeah, there are certain dates. They have a construction start date, so they have their permitting phase. And then they have certain conditions that have to be met before they can commence construction. And we have to sign off on that, and then the construction date starts. So their scheduled acceptance date is keyed off of the construction start date, essentially.
Okay.
And that's how you measure X number of days is what they'll be proposing from that date to acceptance.
Okay.
That wraps up this agenda item, and thank you. A lot of work you put into this document, and we appreciate the opportunity to review it and appreciate that you understand our six recommendations. We'll turn to consider approval of a revised groundwater replenishment project no-go criteria for presentation June 12 PUC workshop. And we put this on, at least as a placeholder. I realize that the document, the staff report of the document, was just distributed today. Apologize for that, but we got word last week from Cal-AM, not from Cal-AM, from PUC staff, that the criteria that the governance committee previously approved, a draft criteria to forward on to the PUC, was, in the staff's judgment, not objective enough, left too much discretion to the future governance committee and for to be eligible for a tier two advice letter, which is the mechanism that we're proposing to use to get the PUC blessing of whatever recommendation this committee makes. So we asked Rob Wellington with PCA, who's here, and we had a conference call last week to see how we could tighten up and make the criteria more objective. And Rob, thank you for working and working over the weekend on a revised list. And basically what you have before you is the language that PCA is encouraging us to consider. The item four, so this list, the governance committee in general form already approved, but there's more specific language in the version today. Condition four, that language came from Russ McLaughlin of Water Authority's PUC attorney. And we don't need to necessarily approve this language because it's simply to start the conversation at the June 12th workshop. Yeah, it's a template, and it'll come back after the June 12th workshop for the parties to the governance committee to approve, and that is specified in the governance committee agreement that the parties themselves, so the four entities we represent,
and they will debate the blanks on four.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Okay. It looked to me like something
we didn't
get
just
to
slip that by you. Yeah. So Russ didn't want to. You know that those are key blanks. I have a conference call with DRA this Friday to talk with them about the general structure and in particular how we might fill in those blanks. But if we have thoughts of how we might go about filling that in, you know, we can at least get that conversation started today. So I don't know if people want a chance. I know this is you may not have had a chance to read it.
I haven't really read it, but I just had a question because what was submitted to PC, PUC was, did not have the introductory statement about substantial completion.
Correct.
Yeah.
I submitted, so it was basically just the criteria. He wanted to know what the criteria were, so I gave him just the criteria.
So if we are redoing this, are we going to use that language again, substantial completion?
So I think the governance committee last time around approved it with that language. That
right.
I wasn't at that meeting, but so I think that our going in position would be, and the water authority, I think, water
management. Yeah, right. We both have that language. That's why I wondered. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it makes a difference kind of what PUC sees. Yeah,
right.
That was left out.
Because that is, from their perspective, another area of subjectivity, what is substantial relative to completely completed.
Well, since I'm the one who submitted that to the PC, when I talked to Michael, he just wanted to know the criteria for getting it on an agenda. And
okay.
So it wasn't necessarily a document. I took it as he just wanted to see where we were.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the feedback was, hey, this is going to be a little bit tough for us to process an advice letter. And that's kind of how we sent it to us, why we got this conversation going. If we submit it back to the PC, we can submit all the language you want. I have no.
Right.
There's no issue of having A in there. From my perspective, I just gave him the list last time. That's what
So Rob, since you're
to that, yes.
Yeah, since you're the latest author of this, do you want to describe what you tried to do?
I
here?
Know that the bare bones criteria that were sent up that you last looked at that were sent to the PUC, Michael Zalazzo responded back with an email, and it was interesting because he took the position that, well, this is way too subjective for the PUC staff to deal with and for us to recommend to the commission. And when I spoke to him, I had gone back and created the history, which started with Mayor Burnett's email and letter to the ALJ and staff that said, we would like to have a criteria workshop
to assist in the development of the criteria for the governance committee. So, and if you recall, in the agreement that formed the governance committee, there's a whole process set forth, and it says that the governance committee shall first, at when the time is right, consider the GWR recommendation, and will make a decision based upon its criteria, this governance committee's criteria. Mr. Zelazo didn't understand that, so then your agreement then says, after that recommendation, one way or the other, and a recommendation to, and it's a Category A determination by this committee, then it's up to Cal-Am to go to the PUC with that recommendation and seek a Tier 2 advice letter. And at that point, the PUC can approve it or not based upon whatever criteria, you know, it may wish to apply, subjective or more objective and less subjective. And that's why when I added that introductory paragraph relative, and there's a footnote that says the same criteria or different criteria may be adopted by the PUC when it looks at it gets to the Tier 2 at a subsequent time, gets to the Tier 2 advice letter. And so that was the process. So then we had just a concluding remark relative to the process of how this would come at the time this committee decides that the recommendation is ripe for consideration, just sort of a brief process. Part of that process is set forth in your agreement already. Some is not. So then relative to, and the mayor suggested that we try to meet, and that the goal would be to try to come up with as objective a set of criteria as we could that would be both usable by this committee and by the PUC. And so on Friday, we had a 2-hour plus conference call. Let me back up a step. Back at the last all-party settlement discussion by all the parties relative to this issue, it was decided by the group that...
Be careful of that.
It was decided that there would be some drafting done by three parties relative to the issue.
No decision.
So
direction was given.
It was just drafting. And so a conference call was held on Friday with regard to discussing all the criteria. And this is the, as I say, everything, all of the 8 criteria except number 4 was based upon that discussion and my notes and instructions revised per that long conference call. And then Russ was directed the much more convoluted and complicated item 4, and he has provided that language to us late this morning. And so that, and I've just seen it for the first time, and so I think it's a good starting point. I have some questions about it, but I think all of this is a good starting point to go to the PUC for that workshop on the 12th as a kind of a starting point for the discussion we'll have.
So who's going to send that to the PUC? Do you want me to send it after we get it to them?
I wouldn't mind. I would volunteer to send it because I'd like to remind Mr. Velazzo gently, and we had a nice conversation that this is the criteria that's being submitted for the workshop, which is intended to create the criteria for this committee to look at, and of course we tried to make it more objective. But by the way, this isn't the last step of any criteria that the commission staff or the commission may wish to use. So I would volunteer if that's acceptable to forward it with that same message.
Well, let's first figure out whether there's questions on the substance. It basically, I think it is doing what the earlier version intended to do, which is a little more flesh on the bones.
It emphasizes the positives. The footnotes give some caveats that say, well, maybe this is a letter, maybe there are no lawsuits, but if there are, so it seems like it does what was intended, and then the R door in paragraph 4 or section 4.
And if we have any, we had quite a bit of discussion about what the either percent terms or the dollar premium might be, and both on our call last week and at a recent Water Authority meeting on the same subject. And it's hard to work out because we have been, at least the Water Authority, has been supportive of a portfolio approach and recognizes that that has value, that we're not putting all our eggs in one basket of one large desal plant. But it's hard to determine how much value that has. And the value of GWR being part of the mix depends in part on the schedule that and the progress that the desal project is making. If it's on schedule and on budget and looking good, the premium that we may be willing to pay for GWR is somewhat less. If it's delayed, and if it's delayed substantially, given the CBO and the ramifications of that, we may be willing to pay somewhat more of a premium for actual GWR water relative to paper desal water. And that interaction between premium and the schedule is hard to put in a formula. So that's some of what I'll be talking with DRA about, and I think we should have that discussion on June 12th. But I don't think we haven't worked it out yet. But if you have ideas, it would be good to get those on the table. And
I don't know what other way.
Yeah. Right.
Could I address that just briefly? Yeah. I just looked at this, and as you recall, your previous four referred to a reference by the committee of the premium, and you would look at such factors as resilience, the portfolio approach, externalities, some of which may be determined by a study by the water management district, but then we ran into the question of, well, you can look at all those things, and they are subjective, and so the suggestion by the mayor and some others on the call, Rob McLean for one, the question is that we ought to have, there needed to be a cap, and that's what Russ has come up with, but we have the caps, and it's 1 year or less than 1 year, and I think you've kind of lost track of those other considerations, and I think that was one of the topics that you were going to discuss with DRA, I believe, Mayor. That's just a thought. That's just a first impression of looking at this.
So it seems like the premium becomes more valuable the longer the desal plant is stalled by various issues. So it's hard. It's a moving target.
Yeah.
It's really hard to put a number on that.
Yeah. The mayor's comment the other day was it's based upon the relative schedules. And relative schedules mean two things. They can go back and forth. So. That's hard to put down in language, and Russ has made a great first try.
Let me open it. I consider it open to begin with. Let me officially open it if any member of the public would like to speak to this.
Yeah, I just have a comment, and I wasn't on the call. I was recording Friday afternoon, but looking at footnote 2, and you may have a reason for doing this, this is going to give the CPUC the opportunity to potentially change the criteria at a later time, and you're not going to know what they are beforehand. And my thought would be that actually the workshop actually comes out with the criteria that this governance committee is going to use, and you want the CPUC to use the same criteria. But this gives them wiggle room. They may legally be able to do it at some time in the future, but I wouldn't telegraph it ahead of time. Because I'm trying to get them to focus on the workshop and what comes out of the workshop. That's what you're going to use, so you're hoping that it ties their hands as well. But it gets a commitment from them to use the same criteria.
So you would delete footnote two.
I would delete that for that reason.
Yeah. We don't have authority to tell the PUC what to do if we wanted to, but we don't need to open that door for them.
Anytime I hear an attorney use the term wiggle room, I get a little bit.
It's a legal term.
I think I have really pulled an attorney. I think item 4 is actually not very likely. in the overall scheme of things, the odds of even needing an item four are actually very slim. It seems to me like we ought to be able to bring in GWR a lot cheaper than diesel. So I don't know that four would ever come into play. My concern really is, as a staff member, is protecting my board, if you will. Because the bigger number there is that goes in those blanks, and this goes to Supervisor Potter's concern, the more exposure there is to, you know, for members of the public to say you're running the cost up on this thing, and you ought to be trying to run the cost down. So I'm not sure what the council here, other than use the lowest numbers you possibly can, commensurate with what it takes. I think DRA is going to be telling you the same thing. So, but I'm not sure I know what the likelihood is of number four ever even coming into play. I think it's very slim. So, but I'm worried about the, how would you call it, what may be written in, you know, the Herald and the Pine Cone and other local sources, you know, once they get hold of those numbers.
Well, it seems like if you tie yourself to some percentage or some fixed number, let's just say, when, for whatever circumstance, lawsuits, whatever, the desal plant ends up, you know, 10 years down the road, all of a sudden GWR has a real high premium to it. So, you know, some water is better than no water. So number four seems like it's tying your hands. No matter what number you put in there, it has the potential of being wrong, and then you're tied to a number. So I would sort of agree with Keith that maybe that whole number four is.
So another way that we can do this, and this is just brainstorming on the fly, but we could say, if GWR is has the same revenue requirement as GWR plus 6.4 MGD diesel has the same revenue requirement as 9.6, then you find you check the box. If not, then you have to go through a further evaluation based on all the factors. So at that point, if desal is, if we don't have to worry about it, if it's built now, we don't have to worry about it. But if desal is delayed some number of years because of lawsuits, then it's going to be worth going through some additional process to then, at that point, evaluate what the premium is, rather than trying to specify.
That's right. Right. That would make sense.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
That would fit into what Rob has said that is in the Cal Am application. Equal to or less than as the criteria for GWR.
Right.
As an entryway, that's what you're trying to say. Because, I mean, there's other extenuating circumstances that you can't always catch it. Mm-hmm.
Right.
No. But it would, you're saying leave it open so that if there is some circumstance that delays desal, then GWR could be reevaluated in terms of its cost.
Yeah, and it's going to be hard for us to put, there's two problems with putting a percent premium. One is as a target, because we're effectively saying, yeah, we're willing to pay more money, and that may not be something that we want to say today. And two, yeah, it's quantifying the unknown. Right. There's too many factors out there that about what could be causing relative delay.
So number four sort of needs to be rewritten somehow.
It's tough.
Yeah. It's tough. Rob Wellington was smart to kick this to Russ.
Three pages of notes I got completed.
Before we started, I actually asked Rob, did you write that? He said, no, somebody else did.
Yeah.
Could I make another comment? I want to disagree with Don. I want to go back to that footnote, too. I'd like to keep it there, and I'll tell you why. When I talked to the PUC gentleman, Mr. Palazzo, he made it very clear. I mean, his understanding is that this is all going to be just considered by the commission. This is just criteria for the commission. He didn't grasp the issue that the way, you know, of course, we're all assuming, as the mayor's letter indicated to the ALJ, that the commission is going to approve the application of, you know, the participation of Cal Am, as they've agreed, under your agreement to form this governance committee. So assuming that's the case, you set up a process for the governance committee to have its criteria. PUC doesn't understand that, and I think we can still make a pitch, and we will, on June 12th, that they adopt the same criteria, because that's their goal. But I think we want to make it clear to them that this is criteria for this committee, and I think that would be, I'd like to have that in there just to make it that message. On the 12th, we may still have to, we'll make the pitch that the commission adopt the same criteria.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, Rob, but my point was that we're basically saying at the latter part of this that they can develop any criteria they want.
And they will.
And they can.
Yeah, and they will.
All I would want to do is actually put it in writing to let them know, because we really want them to tie their hands. To the extent the ALJ will help do that.
I think they already know that they can do their own criteria.
It seems like it would be better presented to them, but not put in writing. I mean, I would agree with Don that that is...
Yeah, I just wouldn't put it in writing, that's
right,
all.
Exactly.
And the way I would phrase it is somewhat different than this footnote. I would say these are the criteria that the governance committee and the parties to the governance committee are considering, and will adopt some version of this. And we encourage the PUC, or recommend that the PUC give consideration to adopting the same criteria.
Right, as will come out of the workshop, really, basically, on the 12th.
Correct. Yeah. I think that does it. It accomplishes the same goal. It recognizes that they can be different, but we are affirmatively saying it's our preference that they be the same if the PUC can find a way to get there.
I like your statement that parties that are part of the governance committee have agreed to this, so it gives a little more weight.
I don't know today whether that's the case. I know that the Water Authority and the Water Management District have it. I'm not sure if the county has... No. Okay. If it's important enough before June 12th, I think you have a meeting on June 11th. I'm sure you have nothing else going on that agenda.
Well, maybe if it's not outright deleted, it just needs to be reworded so that.
Eliminate the percentages.
Well, the footnote 2 needs to be reworded, and the number 4 definitely needs to be rewritten.
Okay. I don't necessarily think we need a motion on this. This is just, we're working on a draft that's going to go through more iterations before it needs to be approved. Any other comments on this? Okay. We will declare success for the time being on that and move to item 4, discussion of items to be placed on future agendas. And I'll turn to Cal Am if you have any items you want to make sure are on our radar and will be agendized.
That I can think of. Arlene, can you remind us when is the next session? Is it the 19th of June?
June 13th is when your design team, your Cal Poly design team, is going to meet. And June 19th is your next meeting to discuss other governance committee issues.
So, one comment on the Cal Poly. After we met, the students were still on a high from giving their presentations. I did encourage them for this next meeting, because in their mind, they had gone further than they thought they would by this date, which was good. But then they're like, okay, what's what am I working on next? Because I gave you my presentation. So one of the feedbacks we gave them was, one of the important decisions for us here is 6.4 versus 9.6. Mm-hmm. And the two designs they had laid out don't really slice the way I looked at them very easily to do that. Mm-hmm. So I said, please come back to the next meeting with how you would slice that. Because the idea here is that we want, in order to give GWR as much cost benefit as possible, we need to reduce the cost of the buildings and all the different things to help take cost out of the DSAP project. So I wanted them to look at how they could do that, because they're saying, well, just build a building big enough to do 6.4 and 9.6. Well, the issue is then that benefits the 9.6, but then that benefits the GVR project. So that's what they're going to focus on for the next meeting, is how we can make the plant do both sides, because that's kind of, they were always doing the worst case, but I think that's kind of an important process for us here. So we'll see how that progresses over the next month. And they were curious, you know, do we prefer one building or multi-campus building? And I said, well, you know, you guys got to show me how you want to do this. But now that you're going to be doing the two different sides, let's know. So they're excited to have a new challenge, because they hadn't really thought about that part of the challenge. And of course, they heard some of our other comments and addressed those as well.
I missed that presentation, but Chuck Delisalis was quite impressed with the work. Were you
there? Yeah, you know, it was well done, and I think I had made the comment to them at the time, but I think you really need to kind of underscore this. They had both concentrated on how they were going to have all this outdoor seating and outdoor pathways, and I think really they're going to need to be indoors, because otherwise nobody will take those tours. The other just general comment, I was greatly surprised when their instructor said, well, we first looked at where does water come from? It comes from canals. It's pervaded by canals. It comes from rivers and lakes. And I was quite amazed by that was exactly their statement. It comes from canals. Well, maybe in Southern California, it comes from Northern California in canals.
I speak from Southern California. Not a lot of Monterey County awards.
Yeah,
I
know. Yeah, so that you might just mention that.
We talked a little bit. I mean, and I gave them, there's the AW manual for D-side plants. He didn't know about that, so I said, you know, you'll buy that for your class. It's $75. Just, you know. Right. So,
get one of those.
Yeah. So it was good feedback for them. They'll take that out. But you're right, they're not water experts. He's not, the rest is not. But their designs are, I thought, pretty creative.
But I do think they need to figure out their path of travel within the building, not...
Right. Yeah, they have a lot of interior stuff. So who wants to be out on top of the building in December?
Yeah, right. That's amazing.
One item, I'd just like to clarify a statement I made earlier in response to Ms. Burns' question around the scheduled acceptance date. I was corrected in my reminded of the inaccuracy of my statement. Earlier I said we would be measuring from the construction start date, to the scheduled acceptance date, the number of days they will propose. In actuality, they're going to be proposing from the contract date to the scheduled acceptance date. So we still have the construction date conditions they have to meet before they can begin construction, but that doesn't play into the overall schedule. So if we have this amount of time and they complete construction as planned, great. If they start construction as planned and complete their permitting process, then they're on schedule. If they run late, they have less time to complete the construction. But they're still held to a firm date, but it's based off the contract date, the date they signed the contract. Okay. So overall, I think you get to the same place. It just gives them a little play in how long, or the date that they actually start construction.
So if they're slow in getting the permits, they can try to make up the time in the construction and still be on schedule.
Right. Right.
But you know, there's a lot of the permitting that, as we all know, going through the county and et cetera, that is simply the process, but it can get so strung out, which doesn't appear to be anybody's fault but theirs, because they're in the permit process. You don't want your construction period to get cut so short they take shortcuts to meet it. That's why I thought there should be some readjustment at the start of construction to make sure,
If the permitting process goes along and it's not their fault, then they'll get time added
but,
on it.
You know, what is their fault? Let's just say, right, you go through the... Have you taken some plans through the county lately?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's submit the plans and here it goes, and there's no way to determine that it's not their fault, because it's the county process, whether those get sent out for plan check, whether they do...
I'd be surprised if they'd even get into the county. I mean, I can't imagine any smart contractor accepting a term that made the time limit for construction anywhere contingent upon the amount of time it took to get a permit. I just
wouldn't
agree.
I really
with
think
that.
You've got to look at that, because...
I don't care where I am.
Yeah. But here is even worse than other places.
To look at it more
closely. Jim's meeting him.
Yeah, let's not point fingers.
Here, wait till you want one. I believe you are an AIA.
Oh, AIA's been working on it, but it doesn't seem to be going forward. Anyway, so I really think you want to be careful of cutting your construction time to the point that somebody is either working around the clock, ending up with some workers' comp issues, you know, just cutting corners and trying to meet that deadline.
Right. Again, I guess the theory is, we'll look at it, but the theory is, okay, they're the experts, they're managing their time here, and I know there's the exception on the permit, but they still have the performance requirements to meet. So if they have to do double shifts or something to meet the time frame, that's their risk as structure. But we will look at it again.
Just be careful.
Yeah. Are you interested in us adding that as a seventh recommendation? Or
I would just because I think it's that critical. I mean, the whole permit processing here, somebody could be as diligent as possible because they've gone through the permit process somewhere else and said, we can do it in this many weeks or months. That doesn't mean you're going to do it here. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't appear as though it's the agency's fault. It's going to look like they just didn't push hard enough or follow through or whatever, but that's not necessarily the case.
It's always a very tough issue to deal with.
I'm okay with being added. It's number seven.
Yeah, just take.
It's important.
You take.
I mean, we're living out of St. Clair. We made it through the county permit, right? But it took 7 months longer than we thought.
Right, right. So, yeah.
Of course, we've never issued, nor have most jurisdictions, permits for dam deconstruction.
No, exactly. No.
How many has the county issued one for desal?
That would be my point.
Yeah.
This one didn't take that long.
No, we've done a couple of those. We didn't tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nader just got one.
Nader.
Okay. You want to make that a motion?
Did we make any of this a motion? I thought it was recommendations.
We did make
a motion. Oh, okay. Yes, I would make a motion to add that as a separate item.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. So we now have an amended list, including set out. Any other items? We will adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.